So Ben says that he writes down his words to make sure that he has words to say, and I do the opposite. I write down words to make sure I don't say too many, and we'll see how that goes today. I wonder how many of you have heard this one. A wife says to her husband, "Why don't you ever go to church with me?" And the husband replies, "Huh, because that church is so full of hypocrites." And the wife replies, "That's not true. There's still room for one more." Today's message is about religious hypocrites. That's what Jesus talks about all the time in Matthew chapter 6. Don't be like the religious hypocrites. But we do have to face it. The church is full of hypocrites because you are all hypocrites, and I am too. If you define a hypocrite as someone who says one thing and or says they believe something and then they actually do something different, then all of us, everyone in the world, religious or not, is a hypocrite at some point and to some degree. So, little example for you this morning. I would like you to stand up if you think that texting and driving is a bad thing. I want you to look around and shame anyone not standing, unless they have a baby. Now, I would like you to sit down if in the last month you have texted while driving. And I'd like you to sit down if in the last... Pardon me? Red lights count. If in the last month you have looked at your phone while driving. Maybe checked the score, maybe checked an email you didn't text. I'd like you to look at a Snapchat. I'd like you to sit down if you have made a phone call while driving. And lastly, I'd like you to sit down if you don't own a cell phone or if you don't drive. Okay, now let's give a hand to those who are standing still. Excellent job. You can sit down. Now, even for those four who are left standing, I'm sure that if we played the game long enough, we'd find a reason to sit you down as well, and I could probably talk to the people sitting around you for that information, but we won't do that. However, if you who stood, and I hate to single you out, but it works for my illustration, if you are incredibly proud of your self-discipline and judgmental of all the rest of you evil people, then I am sorry that I got everyone to clap for you, because you are a religious hypocrite exactly the way Jesus talks about in this passage and he condemns. When Jesus tells his disciples in the Sermon on the Mount not to be like the hypocrites, he's actually talking about a very specific kind of a thing. He's not talking about just the general thing that humans struggle with, where we say one thing and we believe it, but you know, we fail and we do the other. He's actually talking about the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, a particular kind of religious hypocrite. And it's a hypocrisy that is still common today. It's a hypocrisy that all of us struggle with to some degree and in some way. And it's a hypocrisy that is not only toxic to our own souls, it's toxic to our witness, to our ability to be salt and light as a church. So what exactly was this religious hypocrisy that Jesus went after so hard? Well, let's talk about what he says. He says these religious people, they prayed a lot. That's a good thing. They gave a lot of money. It's also a good thing. They even fasted a lot. Now, what's wrong with all of those things? They believed they're important, and they did them. They weren't hypocrites in that way. The problem was their motivation. The problem was their hearts. They did good things for the wrong reason. And as my dad used to like to tell me, sometimes you're wrong even when you're right. They did these things for the wrong audience. They did these things to impress others. They were a little bit like the Amish farmer in Weird Al Yankovic's song who turns doing good deeds into a competition. You think you're really righteous? You think you're pure in heart? Well, I know I'm a million times as humble as thou art. Well, we might not think we're as bad as the Pharisees or the teachers of the law of Jesus' day, but if you see yourself in any of the following examples, these words from Jesus are for you. If sometimes you really don't feel like, I'm not going to make you stand up and sit down for this one, you can just do this silently. Sometimes you don't really want to come to church, and sometimes you might bicker and fight all the way to church, but once you walk in the doors, you are just sweetness and light. No young parents at all can relate to this. Sometimes when you pray or lead worship or serve in church, you are actually, part of you at least, is checking to see if people are impressed. You know, or maybe, you know, you're playing the electric guitar and then you're playing the drums. Wow, look at me, I'm really good. I don't know, just random things come to mind. Sometimes the only times you pray or read the Bible are in church, but you let on like you do it all the time. When people ask you to pray, you say that you will, but you know you probably won't. Sometimes you humble brag, you know, where you find some way to let our people know how generous or sacrificial you are. Sometimes you turn doing good into a competition. You know, you pray better or longer, or you give more, or you bring the best desserts to the church potluck. Or maybe sometimes you get ticked off when you don't get credit or thanked for something good that you did or gave. This week while I was driving, not on my phone, it was on the radio, I heard a comedian say he had come up with a new line of greeting cards called Your Welcome Cards. So every time you send a gift and you don't get a thank you card, or every time you help somebody out, or you sacrificially serve and you don't get thanked, you can send that person a Your Welcome Card. Isn't that great? Now, if you think that's a good idea, this message is for you. If you struggle with any of the above, the good news is you're normal. We all struggle with these things. But the bad news is that Jesus says that normal is not good enough to enter his kingdom, to be part of his salt and light kingdom in this world. The whole Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' kingdom manifesto. It's Jesus telling his disciples what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And Jesus sets a much higher standard than even what the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were doing. He said, we heard about this last week, that your righteousness has to surpass that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, which freaked his listeners out. Because those guys were pretty much perfect, at least externally, in obeying all 619 Old Testament laws and all the ones they added on to it. That was a pretty high bar already. And Jesus sets the bar higher. Last week, Ben's sermon covered six of the do not laws from the Law and the Prophets and how Jesus raised the bar. So, you know, Jesus said, you've heard it said, do not murder, but I say, don't even get angry or call someone an idiot. Sit down if you've ever called someone an idiot while driving. Maybe I would have got the people with that one. You've heard it said, do not commit adultery, but I say, don't even lust. In other words, Jesus set a standard that goes way beyond what we physically do or don't do, and he reaches down into our hearts. He reaches down into our secret thoughts. We can be inwardly wrong, even when we're outwardly right. And then we look at the passage today where Jesus goes on to raise the bar on the good things we're supposed to do. So last week, chapter 5, do nots. This week, chapter 6, it's the do's. Good things like giving to the needy, praying, fasting. And I would say this is just three representative samples because the first verse says, when you do your acts of righteousness, don't be like the hypocrites. Don't do it for other people. So you can put other things in this as well. He just gives three examples. It's certainly not exhaustive. So attending church, tithing, helping with the children's program, volunteering in the community, you know, out at Bowdoin Institute or with the Mustard Seed or whatever, those are all good things that fall in this category that salt and light kingdom followers should do. They're all acts of righteousness, of goodness. But doing these things is actually not enough for Jesus. Again, Jesus goes to our heart. He goes to our secret thoughts. He goes to our desires. And in particular, he goes to our motivation. Now, I have said, and not because I've heard it, that if we just focus on doing all the do's in the Bible, we won't have time to worry about the do-nots. But actually, according to Jesus, that isn't quite true. It's not only not good enough to not do the nots, it's also not good enough to just do the do's. Because we have to do the do's in the right way. If you followed all that, congratulations. Our motives matter. Our heart matters. Here's the pattern that repeats over and over in these verses. When you do the good things you're supposed to do, don't be like the hypocrites. Don't do them in front of others to be seen by others. Now, the last five words are the key words in what Jesus is saying. He's saying, don't do these things in order to be seen. To be seen by others. And then Jesus goes on and he instructs his followers to do good deeds that we should do in secret. Because then our Father, who sees what's done in secret, will reward you. Which, if you missed Ben's sermon last week when he talked about hyperbole, and you take those words too literally, are going to create some problems for you. How is it possible to always do our good deeds in secret? Should we do away with taking up an offering in our worship service and have all of you only give online secretly? And how would that have worked 4 months ago before we had online giving? Should we stop having any prayers in the worship services? Should we stop getting together for Bible study? Should we stop children's church because, you know, people are publicly serving children? How do you volunteer for anything that's good if it has to be strictly in secret so that nobody can see you? In fact, if you go back to Matthew 5, which kind of kicks this whole thing off, how in the world can you be salt and light in the world? And in Jesus' words, let your light so shine before others that they will see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven if you're doing everything in secret. Is Jesus just contradicting himself and forgetting what he said? Or is he using what, you know, preachers do occasionally and kind of over-exaggerate to make a point? Ben does that all the time. All the time. A million times, I'm sure. I never in the history of the world have done that. It's actually not very difficult to understand. As long as you aren't too hung up on taking the Bible, we say literally, the more correct word is concretely. Because literally means you actually understand it the way it's meant. Jesus was giving a powerful prophetic illustration to combat a problem. He wasn't making an absurd, ridiculous, concrete thing that we couldn't follow. Jesus clearly was not saying never, ever give or serve or pray in front of others, because he commended a woman who gave all she had, which was like two bits, in public where he and others could see it and comment on it. In this very passage, he teaches us to pray, and he begins with the words, "Our Father," which kind of is a clue that this is something you can pray with other people. And of course, he prayed numerously publicly in front of people. So unless Jesus was himself an awful hypocrite, which we don't believe he was, he did all kinds of good works. He healed people, he fed people, he blessed people in front of all kinds of people. This is hyperbole. This is exaggerating to make a point. You know, like saying if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out. Do not take that concretely. So what was Jesus' point? Well, what is at the core here that we have to get our heads around? It's simply this. Don't be like the religious hypocrites, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, who did all the right things for all the wrong reasons. When they gave, when they prayed, when they did all of these things, they were not aiming what they were doing at God. And if they were aiming it at others, it was for the wrong reasons. It was to impress others and to build themselves up. It was, they did all these things for themselves, actually. Look at me. I am so wonderful. You think you're righteous? You think you're pure in heart? Well, I know I'm a million times as humble as thou art. Last week, Ben showed us that all of Jesus' higher standards around the do nots, anger, lust, honesty, loving enemies, and so on, are all about, it's not about you, people. In that case, it's actually about the other person. It's not about any of my desires, my rights. We lay those aside when it comes to anger and divorce and honesty and all of those things. It's not about me. It's about other people. This week, Jesus says that when it comes to all the religious dues, prayer, giving, fasting, serving, hosting, teaching, volunteering, it's not about you. It's all about God. It's all for the audience of God. The issue is our motives. The issue is our audience. Who are we doing this for? If we're doing good things in order to impress people, to gain their favor, their praise, well, then maybe that's what you'll get. But that's all you'll get. But if when we are serving people, praying, leading singing, playing guitar, drums, piano, bringing food to a potluck, hosting people in our homes, if we're seeking to bless and serve other people, and if we're seeking to honor and obey only God, if we're not trying to gain favor or credit, if we don't need to send out a your welcome card afterwards, then we're being like Jesus. Then Jesus says, God will honor us and bless us. Paul picked this up in Colossians 3:17 when he says, whatever you do, whether word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So that's the big idea. That's the big takeaway from Jesus' teaching here. It's simply this. Who's your audience? When you do good things, your audience needs to be God. And you know what's really cool about that? Is it's really freeing. When we really grasp that, it's wonderful because you actually stop caring if you get a thank you for it. Now, I'm not saying as a church we should stop appreciating people. I still think it's a really good thing to appreciate people and encourage them. But that's when you are doing it for God, that's just a wonderful, nice perk. But you don't need it to keep going because you know that God knows. And that's really all that really matters. Now, I do want to talk about some of the other questions that maybe arise from this and the implications. So what about the three examples that Jesus gives? Giving financially, praying and fasting. There's a reason why Jesus picked those, and they were really applicable to his audience then, but they are still really applicable to us today. Those were three things that every good Israelite was supposed to do. So it was an obvious place to start, and it was something that the religious leaders took very seriously, and they did it a lot. And they drew a lot of attention to how much they gave and how wonderfully they did all these things, which was the problem. But today, even though I really believe that those three are just a representative sample of so much more things, I think we need to spend a moment and just look at giving, praying, and fasting in our day, in our context. Because Jesus actually did not say, you know, if you give and if you pray, and if you fast, he said, when? When? It was just an expectation. And if you read through Jesus' words, through the Gospels or the letters that were written by other people in the New Testament, or when you read what we now call the Old Testament, giving, praying, and fasting is just an expectation for God's people. If you're going to be obedient, these are things that we need to do. The reality is that most Christians, and I'm putting myself in this category, I'd say most pastors that I know, don't do those three things nearly enough. They aren't natural to us. They're certainly not natural to us in this culture. You know, in this culture where, you know, we are a consumer, materialistic world. What is natural for us is to be up to debt in our up to our eyeballs in order to have stuff that we think we want. That's normal and natural. How do you give to other people? How do you sacrificially not buy yourself stuff and do without stuff and go hungry in this culture? How do you pray when really saying a blessing before your meal is just kind of a formality and a nicety because, you know, we can buy all the stuff we need. We have all kinds of freedoms and things we take for granted. Prayer only seems to happen for us when something really bad happens. Giving, praying, fasting, they require discipline. They require sacrifice. They require a plan. They require intentionally going against the grain of our culture and our own natural desires. But these are big deals in Scripture. When it comes to giving in this church, we do not make a big deal. I don't know if you've ever heard a sermon, in this church saying, you know, we're leaning on you, you better give more, you have to tithe to this church. But the Bible makes a big deal of that stuff. We make a big deal about what we think Scripture says about we need to be generous people. And we need to be generous in ways that God leads us to be generous, whether that's to this church or other ministries or things you don't even get a tax receipt for. Tax man doesn't even know you're doing them. And I would say for most of us in this room, not everybody, but for most of us in this room, 10% should be the floor, not the ceiling. Most of us in this church, we're in the top 1% of the world in terms of our income. And what you do with your money is a spiritual thing. You know, Jesus says where your money is, that's where your heart is. We may not be hypocrites about donating money to church as long as we get a plaque on the stained glass window or the pew. But that doesn't let us off the hook to not give the way that we should or even not give at all. To say you follow Jesus and not be generous with money makes you a hypocrite. The same is true with prayer. Christians talk a lot about prayer. We talk more about prayer than we actually pray. I'd say pastors included. Actually, I would say pastors especially. Prayer, like giving, requires discipline. It requires a plan. It requires some kind of a prayer journal and a prayer time and a prayer commitment. Just like giving financially requires a budget that you have to follow, praying requires a schedule and a plan that you have to follow. It's not easy or natural or comfortable, but it is right. And I put myself in the category of saying, I need to do much more than I do. I need to be much more disciplined than I am in that. Fasting is another discipline that's obviously unnatural and difficult for us, especially in this culture. And fasting, just a quick reminder, is not just giving up food, although that's a good thing to do as well from time to time. It's giving up anything for a period of time. Shopping, TV, using your credit card, whatever. But fasting is always giving something up for a set period of time for a specific purpose. Often it's doing it as a way of allowing us to more deeply focus in on listening to God and saying, God, I need you to direct me. I need you to help me. I need to know your will. Sometimes it's just a way of disciplining ourselves to say to our appetites, you are not the boss of me. Obeying God is actually more important to me than feeling full. Sometimes it's giving up some of those things so that we can either give more time or more money to something else. So we might give up watching sport. And I'm just going to pick on mostly the guys. I'll speak to myself. If I gave up watching sports and devoted that time to prayer, I'd want to tell you all about what a great prayer I was. G. Jesus then goes on to talk about the secrecy bit. What's the whole thing about do it in secret, do it in secret? We've already said that that's not really practical. It's not really consistent with other things that Jesus says. What's he getting at? I really don't believe it's wrong to give or pray or serve in public. I don't even think it's wrong to always let some other people know you're doing that. Sometimes it's really helpful to do some of those things together and to encourage each other in them. But it's also very, very, very helpful at times in some of these things to do them in a way that nobody could possibly give you any credit. Why? Because we're all driven by pride and insecurity. It's so easy for us to do these things for the wrong reasons. The truth is that we naturally tend towards wanting to get the credit, towards wanting to compete with others to see who's doing it more, to being hurt and offended when we don't get the credit that we think we deserve. And those things take us in a downward spiral. The goal of spiritual disciplines like giving and praying and fasting or any other good works, the goal is not to impress people, and the goal is not to impress yourself. The goal is inside-out transformation. The goal is to train yourself to do things that at first are difficult and unnatural until they actually become easier and natural. That's actually true of any kind of discipline, whether it's riding a bike or playing an instrument. You have to discipline yourself to do what is difficult and hard and unnatural until your left hand doesn't even know what your right hand is doing when you're playing the guitar or the saxophone or playing sports. You just think about where the ball goes, and the ball goes there because of the discipline that you've had. That's one of the goals of spiritual discipline, is this inside-out transformation that after a while, you're not even conscious that you're being generous or that you pray all the time. It's your first reflex. It's just what you do. Which is why I think Jesus talks about our right hand giving and our left hand not knowing. I think that truly godly, inside-out, righteous people do these things for God, for the sake of others. And they're not only not drawing attention to themselves from other people, they're not conscious themselves that what they're doing is different. These hard, sacrificial things, at least at first, become a joy. Which leads me to the last little bit that Jesus says, if you do these things in secret for him and not for your own glory and attention, that there's a reward from God that comes from that. What's that reward? Now, if you think, and sadly I think some Christians do think this, that if you're good enough and you do enough deeds in secret, that God will reward you with health or wealth or just answering all your prayers that begin with, "My will be done." And if you think that's how God will reward you, you don't understand God. That's why Jesus teaches about prayer with the begins, "May your kingdom come and your will be done and your name be honored and hallowed," as opposed to, "Here's my list, pretty, pretty please." And if you think that the only rewards you're going to get from God for obeying him for his sake and not to get credit is that you'll go to heaven and you'll get rewards in heaven, then you don't understand God or the kingdom of heaven. Because Jesus right off the bat says, "Blessed are the poor and the meek," not blessed somewhere down the road. We're blessed now in this life as well as for eternity for a couple of reasons. Number one, when Moses and then Joshua stood before the people of God and he laid out all these do's and do nots, all these rules, he said, "Follow them and you will know God's blessing. Life will be better for you. Don't follow them. Things will go bad for you." In other words, choose life. And when we choose to obey God and follow him, that's choosing life. I've never heard somebody yet who followed God in obedience in terms of giving or praying or serving, you know, came back from a mission trip and said, "I wish I'd have gone on a cruise instead." Whenever we follow our own selfish desires or buy what the world is selling, it's fun for a while. I'll grant you that. But we end up in debt financially, relationally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. The more we do or the more we have of what we think we want in what the world offers, the more we realize it's never enough and we always end up with some kind of hangover. And the more you lean into obeying God, the more you realize it actually is more blessed to give than to receive. But most importantly of all, and this is true for spiritual disciplines all the way through, as well as the reward is God himself. The best thing that can happen to you is that you would experience more of God in your life, more of God's presence, because God is the best thing in the world. He's the most loving, amazing, gracious person in the world. And the only thing better than more of God in your life is more of hearing God say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. I'm so proud of you. You honor me." So here's the bottom line. We need to start by recognizing that we are and we will always be to some extent hypocrites. It's not going to change this side of eternity. There's only one perfect person who was not a hypocrite. And surprise, it's not me. You'll have to figure out who it is if you don't already know. As difficult as it is for us to pray and serve and give and sacrifice, it's even more difficult to do those things with pure motives. There will always be some part of us keeping score. But that is not an excuse to not take a step of faith and obedience and to lean more into what Jesus is telling us and teaching us how to live as followers of his. So you might need to say, as I do, "Lord, I know I need to fill in the blank more. And here's my commitment to you to do this." You may need to talk to somebody else, and you may need to say, "Help me figure this out. Hold me accountable. Do it with me," whatever it is. There's something that you will need to do to take a step that's on you. But you need to follow that immediately and regularly with, "Lord, I cannot do this on my own. More than anything, I need you to help me." Which is why I think Jesus taught us to pray about God's will being done, not ours, and asking him to meet our needs day by day and to forgive us and to help us have grace with others. And so to wrap up this message, even though I didn't spend any time explaining the Lord's Prayer, let's pray it together. So the words are on the screen if you want to read along with me. "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we have also forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen."